In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups. The Rachel Brodskys, who investigate crime,
and the Aviv Rubensteins, who prosecute the offenders.
This is In Sync, Law and Order Edition.
These are their stories.
In the late 1980s, a not-so-lowly writer on the NBC cop drama Hill Street Blues by the name of Dick Wolf sold a pilot of his own to NBC that was half cop drama, half legal procedural, aptly called Law & Order.
Mike Post, the composer behind the piano-driven theme for Hill Street Blues, took Wolf's call to create a theme song for his new show and changed the course of music on television history in the process.
Across seven different series, 65 seasons of television, and 1,341 episodes as of the recording of this podcast, Mike's Law & Order themes and his iconic dun-dun sound has firmly lodged itself into pop culture as an auditory representation of cop dramas, nay, episodic television itself.
Today we'll talk to Mike about composing the Law & Order theme, the iconic dun-dun, and his other marks on pop culture, past, present, and future.
All that and more on this episode of In Sync.
That was especially heinous.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Bring excitement to your landscape with Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. These flowering shrubs and evergreens have been trialed and tested by experts to make sure they look better and bloom better, so they're just as easy to care for as what's in your landscape now, but a whole lot more colorful and interesting. Look for Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs in the distinctive white container at your local garden center, or learn more at provenwinnerscolorchoice.com.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, you guys. How are you?
Mike, you seem amused by our introduction.
Our nonsense.
Okay. All right. So, you know, was it well written? Absolutely.
Was it well performed? No.
No.
Okay, all right.
We're writers. Well, Aviv's a performer. I can't speak to any kind of performing.
Great with me.
In addition to seven different variations of the Law & Order theme song, you've composed themes for the A-Team, Blossom, The Commish, Doogie Howser MD, The Greatest American Hero, Magnum P.I., News Radio, Quantum Leap, Silk Stockings, and so many more themes. So I just want to kind of clear the air to let you talk about all of the different theme songs that you have composed. And what makes a good TV theme song?
Well, I think, number one, whoever created the show, whoever that guy or lady is, they got to hear it and go, if I could write music, that's what I would have written for my show. So that's number one. You got to make the person that hired you, you got to make them happy.
You got to be a mind reader.
You gotta make them overjoyed, not just happy. They gotta think this is the only way it could have been. All right. Secondly, I have to like it. So I just don't want to do anything I don't really like. Thirdly, you want the audience to walk out humming it, recognizing it. So what are you really trying to do? You're trying to write a 45-second, 1 minute, 1 minute, 15. You're trying to write a little mini hit record. You know, the mind reading part is more, in my opinion, a product of keeping your mouth closed and letting your ears work. So in the case of Dick Wolf, you know, okay, he sends me this great script on the pilot for Law & Order. And I go, okay, what's the music sound like? What are you dreaming about? He goes, I don't know. It's your job. I don't know a thing about this. And I go, really? What's it look like? And then he starts to be the filmmaker and he starts talking about, you know, streets are damp and, you know, steam coming out of manhole covers. And, you know, and at the end of all his description, I mean, he goes, look, I don't know what the music should be, but I and he describes the street. He describes everything. And then he says, you know, but you got to, it's got to define New York. I went, Dick, I'm so sorry to let you in on a secret. This, it's already been done. Okay, it's Rhapsody in Blue. It was a guy named George Gershwin. He did a pretty good job of it, you know. And he goes, well, yeah, just do that. I went, oh, okay, terrific. You know, so, well, you know, all right.
And what I've read is that that's where the clarinet comes from in the Law and Order theme, is the homage to Gershwin.
Exactly right. That is precisely what. So what did I really do? I didn't read his mind so much as I listened to him. And, you know, so, hey, what do you do for a living, Mike? Well, I'm actually a code breaker. These guys, or, you know, these people, they talk to me in English, you know, but I'm supposed to make music out of that. So it's a code, you know, that I try and really listen to what the creator's feelings are and put that into music.
Awesome.
Before we dig too much more into your career and Law and Order itself, I would love to ask a bit about the album that you're about to put out. As I understand it, this is your first ever full-length album of original non-TV music.
It's my second. The first one I did, this is picking up where I left off in 1960s. Let's see, 69, I think. I made an album for Warner's called Fused. And that was the last time that I did standalone music, recording of standalone music. Before that, it was all music connected with television, right?
So you've taken a little break.
I did take just a minute. I didn't, you know, yeah.
Have you missed this kind of music recording and creation? And because, I mean, that's a long time, as we've been saying. But did you miss it?
Not a bit.
Why?
But it was a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that question. No, honestly, I didn't miss it at all because I was so busy doing television stuff, you know. And to me, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you're working in a club and they ask you to play Proud Mary, play Proud Mary, you know, and it's like, well, what's your gig today? You know, well, okay, it's like you guys, if you're interviewing XYZ or you're interviewing ABC, it's, you know, you're so, in between those two times, I've been real busy, you know, making music for pretty good television shows, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. And I'm just so interested because this new album, first I want to read the name out. It's Message from the Mountains and Echoes of the Delta. It sounds like it's like a two-parter. And it's in its description, it's described as being very uniquely American. And you have a lot of collaborators on this album. There's a lot of spoken word. I'm not sure if you would describe it as spoken word. I kind of heard it as spoken word by the orator, Amy Keys. And I would just love to know, you know, what initially did you set out to achieve with this style?
This was, this happened in a kind of a weird way. COVID hit. The TV shows I was working on were on a beach, so nothing to do. And I wasn't thinking about doing anything but hanging out and, you know, working, being able to practice again, or, you know, spend more time flying an airplane or golfing or doing something, right? So I'm driving in my car late at night down to the desert, and I'm down a Spotify bluegrass hole, and I'm hearing some stuff I'd never heard before, and I'm going, and you know, I love bluegrass my whole life and played it and know it, and I think I'm authentic and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just getting all emotional thinking about the same things I was thinking about it when I was 14 or 15 and got my first flat top. And I went, wait a second. I don't think anybody's ever done a piece of concert music for a 5-piece bluegrass band and an orchestra. And you were the guy that did Classical Gas when you were 23, you know, with Mason Williams as an arranger and a producer. I bet you could do that. You're the right guy to do that. And so I went home and I got out the drafting table out of the closet and I got the pencil and paper out and I sat down and I started making little bits of music. And I, after about, you know, maybe a week and a half, I went, you know, if this idea works, this will work for a blues band and an orchestra just as well, you know, and two genres of music from the southern part of the United States that you are pretty knowledgeable at, that you are pretty authentic at, and yet you're this orchestral guy and you're not afraid of the orchestra. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a ball, you know, two concert pieces. Hey, guess what? Let's see. This one's looking like it's going to be like 30 minutes long. The bluegrass one. Oh, you know what? These are concertos. These are concertos for rhythm sections, bluegrass / blues, and the orchestra. Terrific. And the more I worked on the bluegrass thing, the more I saw, oh, this is about immigration. This is about people coming to America and giving up everything to get here, you know, and the blues, you know, look, I'm not smart enough, or I don't have any right to tell anybody what the blues is about or where it comes from. But we all know it comes from suffering, and we all know it comes from injustice, and we all know it comes from helplessness and feeling helpless. So that's where all this started. Then where it metamorphosized into, where it ended up, was I hired the genius players that I hired and that were kind enough to donate their talent and time to this endeavor. And then I adjusted what I'd written for the orchestra, and then I played it again to them weeks and weeks later, and they played again. And then I readjusted again. And so it became a conversation between rhythm sections that normally don't read music and an orchestra that normally never jams, right? And all of a sudden, I got this conversation going between these two entities that usually don't mix up much. And now it sounds like one big band, one band talking to each other. And so that's what I think that I've accomplished with the help of, as you said, a lot of collaborators. You know, the bluegrass band is made up of geniuses, and so is the blues band. And I'm not counting myself in that mix. I'm just a guy kind of directing traffic.
It's so fascinating because even though this is your first album in over 50 years of non-cinematic related music, the way you describe it lends itself so much to cinema that I thought you were talking about scoring a Sam Shepard play, right? Like what you're talking about sounds like True West. If you were to put up a live performance of True West, like how you would want to do it, which is a bluegrass band and a blues band and an orchestra. And so even in your least cinematic attempts, you are still speaking that language, which seems to be like what one of your, you know, true gifts is of your career.
You know what? I can't tell you how satisfying it is I'm not kidding you, to talk to somebody as smart as you, because
it's only going to get dumber from here.
I mean, for somebody to get it and understand what I'm doing, and you're 100% right. The way my mind works is I look at a picture and I hear music, and if there's no picture, I close my eyes and see a picture and I hear music. So I was raised on TV, movies, and the radio. That's, you know, all the guys in my gig start out just like you guys, super fans, nerdy as hell. Just like, how does that happen? What makes that thing do that? Why does that work that way? Now, some of us spend their whole lives there's nothing you can play me that I don't understand intellectually. However, when I walk down the street in Memphis or in Dublin and I see an open case and I hear somebody just blazing and killing it, and the tears well up in my eyes and my throat constricts. And I go, I know what they're doing, but why is it doing that to me? This is magic, guys. This whole swimming hole that I'm messing around in here, I don't know how this shit works. It's just magic. It is magic. And so if anybody feels that from this new album, then this is great. This is fantastic. That's all I was after, you know.
Well, we want to pick your brain a little bit about just a little bit more about composing in general.
Sure.
And this is specific to the Law and Order theme. Great. So John Williams once said that his themes were good because you could sing the titles of the movies along with the main theme, and that's something Bill Murray famously did on Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
Is that a philosophy that you agree with? And if so, do you have your own set of lyrics for the Law and Order theme, even if you've never sung them out loud?
No, the only one that I've been able to do it with, I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's an old joke, and it's sometimes true, but I did come up with Hill Street Jews, all my relatives are Hill Street Jews. Okay. I'm sorry. It's true.
When I was listening to the album, actually Amy mentions the Kinder Transport in the first track, which is funny because my grandfather was on the Kinder Transport, assuming it's the same one. So 50 children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather was rescued that way from the Holocaust. And I was just like, what? Wow.
Wow.
It's like visceral. Yeah.
And that's one of them deals, ain't it? Yeah, you know, my grandfather came over in 1901, didn't know a word English, had come from Kiev to, you know, launched from Liverpool, trying to escape conscription in the Tsar's army after a pogrom. And guess what? You know, it's what a country we have.
American story.
Yeah. I mean, how flawed we are, how dysfunctional we are, and yet people are still coming up and coming out and coming around and swimming here and, you know, I mean, fighting for their lives to get here. You know, that word freedom is just so easy to say and so hard to keep, maintain, nurture, you know, what a thing.
So you sang a little bit of the Hill Street Blues song that you sing in your head. Do you have a favorite theme that you've composed, or rather, do you have a theme that you've composed that feels like your own personal theme song that like plays in your head when you're just like being Mike Post?
You know, honestly, I don't have a favorite. If you asked me a version of that question that said, what's the best one you ever wrote that nobody ever heard? I would say a thing called Bay City Blues. Which was a, you know, 10 episode flame out that Bochco did that was very Americana, that used a clarinet before, you know, before Law and Order, blah, blah, blah. At any rate, I'm, you know, I don't really ever hum my own music. And I don't look back very much at all. I it's not that my car doesn't have a rear view mirror. It's just, I never look at it, you know? And,
right.
And I've been so fortunate to be working this long without a break. I've never been, you know, it's never been like, hey, you know, you're not employed. That's never happened. So
you've had some success that composers generally don't get to enjoy. One of your themes for The Greatest American Hero made it to number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1981.
Myself, Suddenly I'm up on top of the world. Should have been somebody else. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I could feel so free.
Which puts you in rare company with the Mission Impossible theme and the Batman theme. And it was further cemented into TV history as being George Costanza's outgoing answering machine message in Seinfeld. Something that I have to admit, I did when I got my first phone line in 1998. So can you talk about the process of going from The Greatest American Hero to Billboard to Seinfeld?
Sure. You know, you asked me first, you guys asked me what makes a good TV theme, and I said a bunch of stuff, but part of it was, hey, make up 1 minute hit record. So, okay, well, they let one of the maniacs in when they let, you know, a kid that was raised on radio and television. I'm a radio guy, you know, I'm a hit record guy. So, okay, I'm a rock and roller that can read and write and orchestrate and conduct. And, you know, all right, well, I was the first one to get in the door and partner up with a wonderful man named Pete Carpenter. And so what was I trying to do? I'm trying to write hit records. You know, now I'm not the first guy to do it. There's a guy named Henry Mancini in our history. And, you know, that old cliche of, you know, building on the shoulders of giants, you know, look, same schematic, same idea. Send them out humming. That's what Johnny does in films. That's what I'm supposed to do. That's what we're all trying to do, is have the audience relate to the music, even when it's not with the film, right? So with the Greatest American Hero theme, Cannell's idea is, hey, Steve, what are you thinking of? It's a great script. What are you thinking of? He said, well, you know, why don't you do a song? Great. I got this lyricist I'm working with named Stephen Geyer. I got this great singer named Joey Scarberry. We're going to make us a hit record, you know? So that's how, that's, It was purposeful. You know, we were trying, you know,
trying. Calling your shot.
Yeah, we were. That's actually right. There it is. There, left field. I'm pulling this baby.
And then did they contact you before it wound up on Seinfeld? Is it fair use at that point?
Yeah, you get a license on demand, they call it. So, yeah, it's already been on the airways. So, the public, anybody out there can, as long as they pay you and give you credit, you're good to go.
At the top of the show, you went into a little bit of the history of your working relationship with Dick Wolf, and you told the Television Academy 20 years ago the story in your own words, and you told us again too. But I'd love to talk about just the instrumentation going from Hill Street Blues, which is very piano heavy and like almost Cheers adjacent. And, you know, The Greatest American Hero is more orchestral, and Law and Order is like synth bass and like these kind of this arrangement that doesn't make sense necessarily on paper. And yet it came to define the whole genre.
Well, thank you. My whole career has been to try and make the ball break the other way. You know, it's like, I'm not saying I'm Fernando Valenzuela, but I'm trying to throw screwballs, you know, because Sam Phillips, Memphis, Tennessee, if you ain't doing something different, you ain't doing nothing at all. You know, I'm trying to just do it a little differently. So with Law and Order, when he, you know, spoke to me in film terms about what he was visualizing, you know, right away I'm going slinky, I'm going, you know, funky, medium tempoed, you know, not so aggressive. It isn't your normal cop show. It's different. It's both the law and the order. And so I've sat down with this new guitar I had at the time called a Kramer, and I was just started popping the strings, you know, rather than plucking them or hitting them with a pick or any, like pulling them away, bat, 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 ow, you know. So it just kind of came together. And then the little keyboard thing, you know, that happened fast, you know, and then I, as we spoke about before, you know, he told me to go ahead and be George Gershwin. I thought, well, give me a clarinet, I'll figure this part out, you know. So that's how the orchestra, how the makeup of the orchestra came together.
Most recently, you adapted the Law & Order theme for the seventh time, Law & Order Toronto, Criminal Intent. So you revisited a piece of music that you wrote 34 years later to update it to like a new world and a new sensibility. What was that process like?
You know, enjoyable. Honestly, first of all, I'm so simple-minded, which is probably the case, or I'm just so easily satisfied by music. Okay. You know, I, honest to God, you know, people go, well, you know, what about bad music? Well, that doesn't exist. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've never heard any bad music. I've heard music not played very well, you know, that I've heard, you know, but this magic stuff that we mess with, is actually, it's pretty simple. You know, there's only 12 tones, right? And the 13th one's an octave. It's the same as the first one. So after Bach died, we went back to the beginning. You know, I mean, it's like this guy exhausted all the possibilities. He basically Odin. He's the guy, you know? And so now everybody else is just like trying to theme and variation. Okay, there's 12 notes. Figure it out, buddy. It's not molecular biology or quantum physics. You know, come up with a good lick and pull it off. So to me, you know, I'm not tired of that Law and Order theme. I hate to be sound stupid, but I work with that show every day and have for 30 some odd years. And I'm happy going to work because I get to mess around. It's almost like if you're in a club and the owner wants you to play Proud Mary, well, play Proud Mary.
Mm-hmm. Play the
What's
hits.
What's wrong with that? You know? I mean, that's pretty good, you know? So,
and you find a way to entertain yourself every time you play Proud Mary.
Yep.
Differently.
Honest to God, I find something to do a little differently that makes it interesting. And even if I did it the same way, it would still be fun. You know, I'm still playing music.
St. Clair's Health, my community, my hospital, my commitment.
My commitment is to support my patients as they face their mental health challenges and help them achieve their goals.
My commitment is to give my patients the care they deserve and trust so they can get back to the life and family they love.
My commitment is to be by the sides of moms and their babies on their most memorable day.
St. Clair's Health, around the corner, ahead of the curve.
Fargo, the new virtual assistant from Wells Fargo, makes banking faster and easier. Like this.
Fargo, what's my checking account routing number?
And this.
Fargo, turn off my debit card.
And this.
Fargo, what did I spend on groceries last month?
And that's just the beginning. Do you Fargo? You can. In the Wells Fargo mobile app. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/getFargo.
Terms and conditions apply. Your mobile carrier's availability and message and data rates may apply. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. member FDIC.
We'd love to hone in a bit on the composing of the clang, which has been covered by multiple publications like American Songwriter, Entertainment Weekly, and NBC.com. Like, they've all gone into it. And American Songwriter wrote, to make that abrupt dun-dun sound, Post used a combination of 6 or 7 sounds in order to get that perfect effect. He sampled an actual jail door slamming shut, the sound of someone taking a hammer to an anvil, and most absurdly, the sound of 500 Japanese men stomping on a wooden floor. But initially, this wasn't something that you thought was within in your department. And the account goes that Dick Wolf asked you for a sound to accompany the intertitles in the pilot.
Scene changes. He called me up on the phone from the dub stage. You know, I think I'm all done. I'm done. Okay. Mm-hmm. Summer vacation. We don't have to take any more tests. We're done. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Is everything okay? So the third day of the dub, you know, it's a 4-day dub. He goes, yeah. Music sounds great. Everything's really good. Really good. Good. Say, listen, I need a favor. I said, okay, what do you need? So well, we're going to do the, we're going to date stamp scene changes. I said, oh, that's a good idea to make it even more like a documentary. He goes, exactly. He said, so I need a sound to accompany these scene changes. I said, terrific. Call sound effects. I'm your composer. I don't fool around with sounds. I do music. He goes, oh, come on, for God's sakes. You know, I said, no, I'm done. I don't want to go back to work on your show. I'm working on something else. Give me a break. Mike, I need a favor. Would you please have my, oh, shit. Jeez. All right. So I'm working with my associate and dear friend at the time, who's now become a very, very, very successful composer in television of his own right, named Danny Lux. I go, hey, Danny, Dick Wolf needs this damn thing. Hey, what? I don't know. We want some sound. Let's bang on some stuff or we'll figure it out. You know, let's look in the library and see if we got samples of anything. So we found those three or four samples and then we banged on some drums and this and that. And I honest to God, I have no idea of it. Does it do the job it's supposed to do? Is that what he ordered? You know, and I send it over there. And I go, hey, this is what I got for you. You know, it's perfect. Couple of years later, maybe 5 years later, he sends me a note. He's such a snarky, great guy. He says, isn't it funny, all the wonderful music you've written, both the score and in main titles and all the, your whole lifetime. He said, after you're dead and gone, all they're going to remember is two notes that aren't even notes.
That's love what they call irony.
Yeah. Right. I'd love to talk a little bit about the history of using musical composition as sound effects. So you got roped into doing sound effects when it wasn't your department. But Disney had this Foley artist named Jimmy McDonald, who would use instrumentation as sound effects in cartoons and early live action movies of the 30s, 40s, 50s. So this is something that has its history in the music department, too.
Absolutely. And he was, look, that guy was famous, you know, that guy was infamously famous, right? He was a genius, you know, him with the slide whistles and all the things that he did, the trombones with the fists in them and the all the different tricks. That guy was great. But you know what? Listen, maybe the most important that it was ever done that I've seen, right? Dunkirk. Mm-hmm. Listen to what Hans did in Dunkirk. I mean,
The ticking clocks in everywhere in Dunkirk.
Oh, and they do the ticking clocks in Interstellar too.
Yeah,
and the screaming of the of that an aircraft makes when it's dive bombing. It's like the wings are about to come off, and you guys are about to meet your maker because hell's coming. You know, I mean, you talk about where composition and sound design intersect. You know, nobody did any better than Hans and that whole crew of guys did.
So speaking of Hans, I kind of want to talk logistics because you're listed as composer for every single episode of Law and Order, SVU, the whole nine except for Organized Crime, which is the almost newest iteration. How involved are you in the day-to-day composition of these shows? Do you have, so Hans has like assistants that do like that he collaborates with and they, you know, compose within certain parameters and then he oversees them. Do you give the editorial team a handful of stingers and dramatic tones at the beginning of the season to use at their discretion? Or do you compose every single episode of the season of law of every season of Law and Order?
Okay. If you ask me this question, if you ask me a question that would lead to the same answer, and if you ask the question of what are you most proud of? I am most proud of, I've never put my name on a piece of music I didn't write. Okay. So here's what I do. I have two guys that work with me. One on a board, he's an engineer. One on a computer, he's a sequencer, he's a synthesizer, orchestrator, or sample illustrator, but he's a composer, right? Okay. I come in, I look at the picture, I play the music, or I write it. Mainly I play it.
Typically on the, you play on the piano?
Keyboards or guitar, but mainly keyboards. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Calling up samples, calling up sounds, right? It's just like the surgeon, you know? Okay, prep this guy. All right, I'm going to cut on him. Okay, close him up. And now, do the people that I work side by side with, do they help me? Hell yes, do they help me. Do they compose music? No, they don't. If they do, they get credit. They get credit on a cue sheet, which means they own part
of it. They get money, yeah.
They're right. And they get credit with the producers. So that, like in the old days when I used to write, you know, Pete Carpenter and I, one season had 10 shows. Okay. We did not write all that music. So at the end of the crawl, it would say additional musical composition, and list the names.
Mm-hmm.
The orchestra knew, the producers that were present at the scoring always knew. Okay. I'm only speaking for me. It's not within my lane of morality to put my name on another person's music and say, I composed it. I don't do that. And that's just me. I'm not making judgment on any other composer. But I am proud that I've never ghosted any, and I've never ghosted for somebody. Guys that do this for a living, in my opinion only, are not ghosts. We should not be nameless, faceless. Okay. So now, when it comes to you walk in a bar and some guy's playing a piano, you know, you can't even see the piano player. And do I do that music? No, no. Do I give them credit for it? Yes, I do. But I don't, you know, I don't do source music that isn't seen on screen, you know, so.
We love that. We know that's not always the case.
Yeah.
Correct. But other than that, I don't have a crew. I've done every piece of music for every show that I've ever put my name.
Incredible.
Well, there have been some famous musical moments in Law and Order, like some rip from the headlines stuff that mirrors things that really happened. Like, for example, in season 14, there's an episode that mirrors Chris Brown and Rihanna
assault.
Absolutely assault.
And the episode opens with the Rihanna analog, Misha Green, recording an R&B track. But there's also a Law and Order band called Crisis from 2002. It's like a Nirvana sound alike. There's Wotan in the next year, which is like a riff on Great White.
Yep.
And then Justin J Train, Smolka from 2006, which is kind of like a Kevin Federline parody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we wondered how involved you were with the composed for the show pop songs that appear in the Law and Order universe.
Completely out of my control. Listen, you know, very often script writers, showrunners are music fans, right? So, oh, wow. You know, we get a chance to put our favorite music or music that meant something to us in our scripts. Okay. Now, it probably started most famously with a movie called The Graduate. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it.
Yeah. So,
it's a little obscure movie.
Who was the composer to The Graduate?
Paul Simon.
Okay. Because there is no score. It's just songs. And
yeah.
Did it work? You betcha. Now, did myself and Jerry Goldsmith and Dave Grusin and Johnny Williams and all the rest of us go, wow, that really works. What about us? What about our art form? Well, guess what? You know, you don't always need us. You know, when you need us, you need us. When you don't need us, you don't need us. Sometimes we coexist with pop songs. And there's nothing wrong with that.
So you've played right into our trap, Mike.
Good.
Because I wanted to see if you were down to play a game of what does this fake Law and Order band sound like? So I'm going to give you the name of a band or group, and you have to you can either tell me what it sounds like, or you can hum a few bars of what you think if you had to write these songs. You don't have to play this game if you don't want to.
Oh, no, I'll do the best I can.
So we have a band called No Boat. These are all bands that we don't hear on screen. So there's nothing to compare to necessarily. We have a band from 1993 called No Bozo Jam.
Ah, that's easy.
Oh my God. I'm so happy that you had that.
Just the piano right
there. He is right in front of you.
You're sitting where I work, you know.
Perfect. This is working out better
than I could ever. This is making it even better. I know. Yeah.
Do you want to take the next one, Rachel?
Yeah. Okay. So, how about what do you think? Okay. I know who I think this might sound like given the year, but what do you think Sister Godiva might sound like?
Let me think of this. Oh, okay.
The best killer thing that's ever happened to me.
I know, right? Okay, I was going to say that I was like, is this like Destiny's Child?
Yeah. Sister Godiva. I think it was too early for Destiny's Child. I think it was like more of a metal band. I can't actually remember. I had Law & Order fans write into me with these fake band names. All right, next up is Sound Joint from 2001. Your only clue is their manager was played by Joe Piscopo.
Okay, well, they've died of a steroid overdose, this band. They can't play anymore.
They were supposed to sound like NSYNC. I think that they were supposed to be like a boy band.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you see, I'm about out of ammo on the keyboard. I probably have to plug in a guitar now and do all my heavy metal bullshit, you know. So.
Oh, you're good. You're good. We appreciate you even.
Yeah,
just
whatever
a
you.
Couple. Yeah.
Let's just do one more. This is the one that inspired this list in general, which is we only see this band in a poster. They are the Babylonian Bagel Boys.
Well, it's got to be Kesmer. You know, I mean, we're going to do Hava Nagila and combine it with Rhapsody in Blue. Okay.
Perfect.
Oh my God, the Babylonian Bagel Boys.
Yeah, there's like a poster that has driven me crazy. It appears in a bunch of different episodes.
I have to tell you, I had a blues name when I was 17. Okay, you know what my name was?
Tell us.
Blind Boy Bagel.
Yeah, so you are the Babylonian Bagel Boy.
But I guess that's what I became.
So now it's time for me to make an admission.
Yeah.
I co-host another podcast. It's about Law & Order SVU. It's called Law & Order Special Viewing Unit, where my childhood friend and I, whom I grew up with watching SVU, view and review and lovingly mock every episode of Law & Order in a row from the beginning. We're starting season 15 today. And we have always thought of the Klang as a gung gung with two G's. And that's the way we say it at the end of each episode, gung gung. And many other folks say it's a dun-dun. You've said chung-chung or ching-ching. Is there an official onomatopoeia for the Klang?
Nope. That, you know, it's been referred to and everything you've just listed, also ding-ding. I've heard ding-ding.
Oh, that sounds so delicate.
So here's actually my favorite is what Dick refers to it. He goes, the thing. Just do the thing.
Put do the thing. That reminds me of The Simpsons. So Homer's famous catchphrase is like dough, D'OH. But in the script, it's like just angry grunt or something. They never say the dough.
Yeah.
But since the Klang is technically a piece of music, is it used like a music license or a sound effects license?
Buddy, these jet airplanes don't fly themselves now. Come on now.
I want you to get paid.
I do get paid. It's a piece of music.
Oh, I definitely believe it. I'm walking on air.
Yeah. Okay, buddy. Look, it's, you know, this wasn't for me to say, but in that first episode, in that first pilot, you know, it went down as a piece of music. So it went, it's a piece of music. The coolest, one of the coolest pieces of fan mail that I got was maybe season 4 or 5. And it was from a principal of a big high school in Cleveland. And this principal writes to me and she goes, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the great music you've written, but none has been as effective for me as an administrator at an inner city school with a lot of problems as the ching ching or the chang chang or the clang clang. She goes, so whenever I have to call a student to the principal's office, it goes out over the intercom. And what happens is, chang chang, Billy Smith to the principal's office. She goes, it strikes fear into their heart. He said,
it's visceral.
To change your underwear before they get there. They know they're in trouble, you know. I thought that was the greatest thing I'd ever heard, you know.
Real quick, I just wanted to know if Mike had seen, to get a little bit into TikTok, there's been a spate of, across the years that TikTok has existed, there's been a spate of people just dancing to it and then making up their own dances. Have you seen this, and what have you thought of that, if not?
Okay, I thought you were going another way, but I have seen so few people play it, the Law and Order theme, and a few people dance it, and a few people do. Have you seen the dogs howling?
No.
Yeah, I've seen it all.
You've seen it all, yeah.
I don't know what, I'm pretty sure it's the clarinet that does it to them, and then I'm pretty sure that they get used to hearing the clarinet and howling, and now just to hear bum bum, and they start howling. So it, Rachel, you have to look at this. It's the funniest goddamn thing you're seeing.
Oh, I'm definitely going to look it up after this talk.
And I'm a dog guy, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm torturing all these canines out there.
My dog loves it. There's like a collection of memes that we put into the document. There's the one with the broken Dunkin' Donuts sign that just says Dun Don.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's great.
And a video of a guy talking about composing the SVU theme in 1997 and just like going harder than anyone else wants.
Yeah,
to.
That guy's funny. I never answered that. I should have gone on there and went, hey, god damn it, you know.
Something. If you have, we have a TikTok. If you have a message for him, a cease and desist perhaps, you can say it now.
Okay, buddy, I don't know who you are or where you are, but I have people in many places, and we're coming hard. That's my music. Okay, we're coming.
And they will all get credited.
Yes, and they will all get credited. Many cast members have joked about how much money you make for each instance of the clang or the theme, and even you joke that it's like the sound of a cash register. We don't need to get into dollar amounts if you don't want to, but I'd love to get into the licensing of the clang, residuals for broadcast, syndication, and streaming. There were two major strikes last year for WGA and SAG, and IATSE is negotiating a new contract right now. Composers don't have a union. And as a result, it's kind of the Wild West in terms of your contracts and your residuals. So I'd love like a peek into that window as someone, as a musician who like longs for a theme placement. What does a Mike Post contract look like for usage?
So I'm going to tell you the real deal. So when I go to Berkeley or to ETSI or to UCLA and I talk to the composition classes, and usually they're people getting their master's degree or PhDs, inevitably, some very bright kid will raise their hand and go, Mr. Post, how have you been able to monetize this in such a way? I mean, how have you been able to maximize this? I said, well, do you figure that I got my degree from like Wharton or Columbia or maybe even NYU? I mean, how do you figure my education, right? I never went to college, number one. Let's start with that. Am I a good businessman? No, I'm not. Why? Why am I not a good businessman? Well, because I don't care. Okay, I didn't start this for money, and I'm not doing this for money. Do I get paid a lot of money? Yes, I do. I've never taken a job because it pays a lot, and I've never turned one down because it doesn't pay anything. All I give a damn about is the music. Now, I've worked for my best friend, Steve Cannell, my dear best friend, Stephen Bochco, and my new best friend of 50 years, Dick Wolf. I worked for three buddies. I worked for guys, honest to God, this is a true story. The phone rings here one day. Hey, it's Cannell. Okay. Hey, how you doing? God damn it. What's wrong, Steve? He goes, you know, He just left Universal, started his own company. He's now the deficit financier. He goes, this is total bullshit. Bullshit. I said, what is wrong? What's got you all? He goes, I just found out what you make on Rockford Files as a fee. I said, yeah, this is baloney. You're my best friend. He goes, a third of the reason that this show is such a big hit is what you and Pete wrote as a theme song. You know, this is baloney. You're not. I said, listen, first of all, you didn't die. Nobody died and made you king. You don't run the business. You don't get this. I said, yeah, I'm getting paid fine. Don't worry about it. He goes, Mike, this is baloney. Figure out what's the most amount of money I can pay you and not get laughed out of the business. I went, okay. Okay. So I called him back the next day and I told him what I thought. And he said, great. And I said, there's something you don't understand, Cannell. I said, you know, your money as a writer goes down a little bit each year as it gets syndicated and goes out to foreign and everything. He goes, yeah. I said, my money doesn't do that. I said, you're looking at the fees. There's two ways composers get paid. They get paid for the fee, the blood money, right? Then they get paid. He said, do you have residuals? They're not called residuals for us. It's
royalties.
Performing rights. That's what it's called. And it's protected by U.S. copyright. 70 years past my death. Okay? They're collected by organizations called ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, so on and so, called performing rights organizations, PROs. I'm a BMI writer. It's the biggest performing rights organization in the world, okay? I go to sleep at night and never even think about it. Don't worry about it. Don't care. I never look at a contract. The contracts come in 6 months after the show's been on the air. So my life is not business oriented. It's not. Now, do I pay attention to the money after I cash a check? Yeah, I do. You know, I still live, you know, right where I was raised. Now, do I live well? Absolutely, I do. How did I end up being comfortable or well off or whatever the hell you want to call it? I listened to my big brother who said, hey, stupid, you got no safety net under you. You don't have a degree in nothing. You know, you have a degree in bullshit. So, you know, let's save more than we spend. Okay. I said, sure, whatever you say, you know, as long as I got enough to buy guitars and, you know, I'm a happy guy, you know. So
it sounds like you had people looking out for you. And there's this adage that I heard once that said, I'm trying to remember who said it to me, but it was something I never forgot. It's just how, you know, if you find people that you like to work with, just work with them as long as you can.
Hey, you know what? I just kept my guys happy. Mm-hmm. And they overpaid me, to be honest. I mean, come on. Listen, anytime you can be in this business.
For our audio only listeners, he's doing a mailbox thing with his elbow.
Nope, I'm doing an oil well thing. You punch up in the ground. You set up a rig, you walk away. You're sleeping, it's working, okay? I write music, right? Here's a weird one. I've written 7,200 hours of television. Okay, that's a lot. It doesn't seem like it to me because I'm still looking forward to going to work tomorrow. But that's the truth. I've written 7,200 hours of TV. Guess what? It never goes away. It never goes away. The Joan Rivers show, you know, the theme for who knows what, you know, I mean, it's you ask around. Merv Griffin's theme to Jeopardy made him so much money. You can't believe it. You know, so Johnny Williams theme to the NBC News theme, buddy, that's a good gig right there. You know, so the point is that while I'm sleeping, you know, something's playing everywhere, you know, and BMI does such a wonderful job of keeping track of this stuff and making it pay more every year in little. It's a pennies business, but it's a lot of pennies.
Especially with 7,200 hours of television. It's a lot of pennies.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I'll tell you one story. Me and my partner, Pete, we're doing an episode of Rockford Files in the first season, and we were up against it really hard. And in those days, You go look at the picture. They send you these breakdowns in tenths of seconds called cue sheets. You write the music to that, right? And then 3 days later, you go into the studio and you conduct the orchestra, and that's the music. And it's like 11 at night. We've been working like 16, 17 hours, you know, and we're both tired. And I go, and I think we were making at the time, we were making like $3,000 an episode in fees. Nothing, you know, I mean, just nothing. 1973 or whatever it was. And I went, man, that's a stack of music we just wrote. And he goes, yeah. And I said, $3,000 ain't very much for, you know, for doing what we did. And he goes, Mike, someday I'll be dead. You'll be old. And this shit will be paying you because it'll be playing someplace. And he said, this is a crazy way to make a living. It's like pulling on a bungee cord. You pull, you wait, and all of a sudden it comes rolling. And it isn't the reason that I started doing it, mm-hmm. but it sure is nice.
Yeah. I mean, you've been blessed with an amazing talent and an incredible career. I wish that for everyone who works as hard as you do.
You know what? I don't work hard. I work. Hey, Dad, are you going to work? Yeah, not really. I'm going to play. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's like you guys. I mean, you do. How much fun is what you do? Seriously.
Pretty fun.
All right. So you get to stand and write really smart stuff about people that interest you, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least a line of work that interests you. And then you get to talk to them and spring stuff on them and, you know, have them, you know, have them be surprised or flattered or whatever by your interest. I'm the same as you guys. I get to work for my friends. I get to work with my friends. I'm insulated from what most composers have to go through, because I don't ever talk to the network. I don't ever talk to the guy, the suit guys. Those guys never met me. Yeah. And then in the end result, look, I'm in the band. We come in through the kitchen. We play for the rich people. We leave through the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, some of us get some notoriety or whatever. Sometimes some of us get rich, right? But the truth is, we come in through the kitchen. We leave through the kitchen. And what do we really care about? Hey, was that any good? Did anybody like that? Do we get to do it again tomorrow? You know, I mean, that's all that it is. You know, you're a player. It's like, is this any good? It's a life in art. A life in art is emotionally risky, right? Well, if you have a life like me and you've been working since you're 16 and never been unemployed, and mostly everybody's liked it, mostly, you know, it's like, God almighty, how can you step in the ring with Mike Tyson and still be okay? You know, well, I'm okay.
I have nothing else to say. Do we have any final thoughts before we do our sign off?
Yeah. One thing to say, you guys are really fucking good at your job. You guys are interesting to talk to. You're quirky as shit, and it's great. And you write really well. That stuff is really, I can't wait to, I'm going to tune into your podcast about Law and Order.
Please do not.
Yeah. No, please, you should. I hope it's
crazy. You know.
We're sending you hearts through the screen.
Yeah, thank you
We appreciate you and your work. And thank you for coming on In Sync to talk about your career and your new album, which we're very excited about.
Yes.
You're the best In Sync I've ever heard. That's
really good. Thank you. Yeah. That's it for this week. Thank you so much, Mike. We are edited by Katie Yonner, production coordinator Kyle Bosch, associate producer Lou Barron. Hi, Lou. Social media producer Dale Stamfleet, executive produced by Tommy West. Original music by Taylor Barefoot. We are a Pro Taylor podcast. In Sync is a production of Gotham West Studios. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at The In Sync.
St. Clair's Health. My community, my hospital, my commitment.
My commitment is to support my patients as they face their mental health challenges and help them achieve their goals.
My commitment is to give my patients the care they deserve and trust so they can get back to the life and family they love.
My commitment is to be by the side of moms and their babies on their most memorable day.
St. Clair's Health, around the corner, ahead of the curve.